Well, 2020 was called the golden age of conspiracy theories. The pandemic has intensified a phenomenon that my first guest calls conspirituality. He didn't coin the word, but it comes in handy, where alt-health meets alt-right, wellness meets QAnon. Matthew Remsky is an author and yoga therapist who describes himself as encouraging students to explore how yoga practice can resist the psychic and material dominance of neoliberalism and environmental destruction. So far, so out health, you might think. But he is seriously concerned about what he calls the alliance of alt-right conspiracists and New Age wellness influencers. He co-hosts a podcast called Conspirituality. And Matthew Remsky is with me now from Toronto. Hello, how are you?
I'm very well, Kim. Thank you for the invitation. It's a real pleasure.
It's a pleasure. Are you alt-health?
Do you know, you actually cite an older part of my biography there, calling me a yoga therapist, which is, it was true for a time before that became a more regulated term. And so I no longer refer to myself that way. I also used to study and practice a form of Ayurveda, which is kind of the, you know, the folk medicine tradition of India that is associated with yoga practice. I don't really do that anymore either. I would consider both of those fields to be in alternative health, and I think they can be practiced ethically, and I think they can be practiced with a lot of artfulness, but I also think that they have a vulnerability to them that we've seen play out over the last year as conspiracy theories have ripped themselves into the alt-health sphere.
So are you telling me that you sense the danger of the area and have now retreated from it?
Well, that happened many years ago. Actually, I've worked as a sort of industry researcher and critic for a number of years, and I've also done a lot of work to investigate abuse in the yoga world and in the Buddhist world as well. I'm a cult survivor, and so that's part of my research portfolio as well. But as far as seeing QAnon and conspirituality coming into wellness and spirituality places, I can't say that I'm surprised because there were a number of vulnerabilities that kind of held the door open for significant numbers of people to begin to align themselves with the conspiratorial frameworks of QAnon, or what we might call pastel Q. So not quite going all the way into the fever dream, but kind of kissing at the edge of it. Soft Q is another term that we use on the podcast as well. But conspirituality, as you defined it, or as you referred to it, was defined in a 2011 academic paper by David Voas and Charlotte Ward, who described a growing online movement that began to bring together, horseshoe together, really, a kind of male-dominated political cynicism with a female-dominated spiritual altruism, and this phenomenon they described as conspirituality. How we see it play out in 2020 is a kind of heightened tension between not only the public health disaster and crisis of the pandemic, but also the ways in which wellness influencers have to really magnify and amplify their promises of universal health and healing in order to not only retain their market share, but also maintain a kind of cultural relevance at the very point at which, you know, the world is demanding a scientific answer.
Let's just define our terms for a moment. What is alt-health and what is alt-right?
All right. Well, alt-right is a ultimately violent and racist movement that is spearheaded primarily by people like Richard Spencer in the United States. He coined the term, and he, you know, his entire focus was to rally for, you know, a white, you know, ethnic state, which of course has to have violent implications to it, because if he's speaking in any place within liberal democracy, he's talking about, you know, multi-ethnic spaces. Now, alt-right would be the sort of farthest right to the political spectrum that we see some wellness influencers tracking towards in the conspirituality movement. Certainly QAnon has alt-right aspects within it, themes within it, that are both white supremacist and anti-Semitic. But alt-health would be the field of, you know, alternative medicine, complementary and alternative medicine, sometimes it's called, folk and indigenous healing traditions that position themselves in opposition to conventional biomedicine and public health. Now, these disciplines can work in concert with each other, they can harmonize with each other, and then they can, especially in the American economy, where, you know, there's no universalized healthcare and people are naturally skeptical towards, you know, predatory medical systems and terrible insurance rates, there can be a real antipathy between complementary and alternative health and conventional medicine. And that's one of the cultural tensions that the pandemic has heightened, and that people who push the messages of conspirituality have actually exploited.
COVID denialism is the cause du jour, if you like, of conspirituality movements. And it might be illuminating if you described for us an individual called Kelly Brogan, mm-hmm, and her husband, Sayaji, who is the founder of the anti-vax website greenmediainfo.com, for purposes of illustrating the argument.
Right. Well, I published an investigative feature through Jen at Medium on Kelly Brogan and Sayaji. Early on in the pandemic, Kelly Brogan, who was well-credentialed and respected as what she called herself a holistic psychiatrist, but where she really had sort of cultural cachet was in the very good arguments that she made against contemporary practices in psychiatry that she described as being overly intrusive or pathologizing. She criticized overprescription. She, you know, criticized the vagueness of the contemporary DSM, and she made the very powerful point that very often women are both pathologized and then victimized by modern psychiatry for symptomologies that, you know, might be better cured through, you know, more holistic means, or certainly better power dynamics.
And so far, so good, you think?
Yeah, so far, so absolutely.
All right.
So far, so good. And she. However, she also kind of dipped her toes into various alt-health discourses, especially the work of an alternative health cancer doctor named Nick Gonzalez, who she described as a mentor. And he had some very interesting ideas about cancer being curable through dietary means and coffee enemas and stuff like that. And she also became a practitioner of Kundalini yoga, which was innovated by the now understood to be criminal and sex abuser Yogi Bhajan in the 1970s. Anyhow, she really started to cross over into the alt-health sphere with a kind of alternative pathway towards mental health and psychiatric deprescription, as she called it. Now, so that's how she builds her reputation. Once the pandemic strikes, she takes the argument that she has applied effectively and I think reasonably to psychiatry. And she's just sort of bumps it over to epidemiology and virology, which means that in April, at some point, she releases a video called A Message to Dispel Fear. And it's, you know, this very compelling, charismatic selfie sermon where she's speaking from her home in Miami and she's ringed in light and you know, the framing is all very beautiful. And she gazes into the camera and she basically tells her hundreds of thousands of followers, look, I don't believe that there is a virus. I don't believe that viruses kill people. I don't believe in germ theory. I believe in terrain theory. And actually, I'm suspicious that this entire, you know, pandemic is actually manufactured or engineered as part of a transhumanist agenda and so on and so forth. And so, you know, it's funny because it's called A Message to Dispel Fear, but actually it's a terrifying,
terrifying
statement.
Yep.
Right. And well, and this is the thing is that there's this sort of whipsawing back and forth between influencers who will tell their followers the most horrible things about what public health officials and epidemiologists, how they're lying to them. And then in the other hand, they will hold out the solution. And the solution from Kelly Brogan's point of view is intimately tied in with the business of her husband, Sayer G, whose Green Med Info website sells all kinds of alternative health remedies and information. And so she takes this argument that, okay, psychiatrists don't know what they are doing, and they are deluded, and they don't know the sort of finer points of doctoring the soul. And she sort of jumps the track and uses that same argument to suggest that epidemiologists don't know what viruses are or how they behave. And so there's this really interesting interplay of sort of stretching her credibility into a zone where she has absolutely no training whatsoever, but she carries her charisma with it. And so then she is able to speak in very poetic and powerful terms about, you know, how the mask is actually a sign of, you know, compliance with a suppressive state, and how, you know, we need human contact. And so the state doesn't want us to hug each other. She kind of turns public health into the evil MK Ultra psychiatrist who's trying to, you know, trap vulnerable people into insane asylums, and it's a very effective message.
Are you suggesting that the dodgier parts of the wellness industry, as represented by Kelly Brogan and Sayer G, are seeing a buck to be made out of COVID denialism and exaggerating the sinister motives of the state, etc.? Is that what it is?
Well, I don't think that that's all that it is. I can say that when we're talking about the influencer economy in general, in wellness and yoga and mindfulness spaces, we're talking about unregulated economies that depend upon the charisma of their, you know, proponents to actually function. So the thing about, I think one of the most tragic things about conspirituality and the infiltration of QAnon into these spaces during COVID is that as people's brick and mortar businesses are collapsing, you know, yoga studios are shuttering, meditation centers are closing down, all kinds of people are going out of business, and all kinds of attention has to be collapsed into the screen and people have to compete over it. It becomes really advantageous for influencers within these unregulated fields, you know, herbal supplements, which is, you know, Green Med Info, you know, a kind of online therapy groups that Kelly Brogan runs, although ostensibly she does so as a psychiatrist. It becomes really, really, I think, attractive if there is something crucial or critical about your content that can now be seen as offering a way out of a terrible situation. In other words, like as social pressures, as economic pressures, and as informational pressures increase and confuse people, the products, the commodities that wellness influencers offer become that much more crucial in their marketing terms. And so, you know, the more you can play up, I think, the idea that, you know, epidemiologists don't know what they're doing, or let's just go right to the vaccine argument, or that vaccines are poison, or that they are, you know, filled with nanotechnology that's going to track you for the rest of your life, or that they're going to change your DNA, which is a very popular argument within conspirituality. If you can play up that, then your Chinese herbs, your meditations, your singing bowl sessions, your group therapy that's unregulated and online, that becomes that much more essential for people to participate in order to protect their health and well-being from these nefarious forces. So I think the more inflammatory the content is that can be sort of crafted out of the public environment, the more the influencer will be encouraged to grab onto it. And I think the real tragedy is that some people might not even know that they're doing it. They might simply be, you know, sort of noticing the feedback loop of repeating certain terms or memes and noticing that their engagement rises.
The interesting word in all this is charismatic, and I talked to Dr. Janja Lalić last week, who was who was speaking about, you will have known about her and her work. You may well know her.
Yes, I do. Yeah.
She was talking about self-improvement cults, for example, Nexium, run by charismatic megalomaniacs, basically. She's a cult survivor, as are you. And indeed, you've looked at cultism in the modern yoga world. But is it social media that has made charisma such a kind of toxic attribute?
Well, I think that it has provided a kind of jet fuel to the natural sociology of charisma, yes, in a way that is almost impossible to control. Charisma is now capable of becoming viral. It used to be that charisma was a quality that was embodied primarily. It would be something that would be reported on by those in the presence of another person. And now social media provides, and also sort of high definition video and, you know, all of the good new audio equipment that's so accessible to everybody now. All of these aspects of technology provide a kind of, you know, bootstrapping exponential power to a very natural social phenomenon that should probably be limited in scope to, you know, a few hundred people at a time in terms of its influence. I don't think we are constitutionally or evolutionarily prepared for this phenomenon of charismatic influence as it's amplified by online technology.
When we talk about conspiracy theories, we usually say right-wing conspiracy theories. Mm-hmm. Why are they always right-wing? What are the left-wing conspiracy theories, and should we be as worried about those?
Well, there is, the conspiratorial mindset itself is apolitical. You know, I'm not a conspiracy historian, and so I don't have off the top of my head a kind of list of left-wing conspiracies to be able to, you know, scan and say, okay, well, what were the danger levels of these? But I can say that the general structure of conspiratorial thinking is, because it's neutral, it's what allows this strange horseshoeing between this culture of wellness and yoga that would typically be understood as being progressive or liberal or hippie, with right-wing ideas that, you know, aren't really associated with it at all. There are other historical reasons for that. But Let me backtrack a little bit because I think I lost. You asked that.
Well, is there a left-wing
If there's yes, is there
conspiracy theory at large? Why is it only the right-wing conspiracy theories that we talk about?
You know, amongst the research gang that obsesses over QAnon, there is a growing awareness of an opposing tendency amongst liberal commentators to begin to do the same thing in reverse. For instance, to begin to make overreaching claims about the findings of the Mueller report or of Russiagate, to begin to make very unwarrantedly certain statements about how Bernie Sanders was run out of the nomination, and to generally construct a paranoid world that mirrors the world of QAnon, and it's been dubbed BlueAnon. Now, I think it's not a particular journalistic focus yet, because I don't know of any people who believe that Bernie Sanders was removed through, you know, a very specific conspiracy, whether any of them are going to get together and storm the U.S. Capitol. I think that's the simple answer there. But the roots of conspiratorial thinking allow for any political, you know, aspiration to attach to them, because they're very simple. They're the ideas that there's three ideas. There's the idea that everything is connected, nothing is as it seems, and everything happens for a purpose. And as I expressed in a Twitter thread that became a little bit popular, these three ideas bind together so many demographics and social movements. And for the purposes of understanding conspirituality, it's these three principles that I think allow us to see that if you have been a yoga practitioner, you believe these three things as a matter of sort of, you know, practice and faith. And however, if they cross over, if those beliefs cross over a certain line of paranoia, they're no longer beneficent. They no longer confer wisdom and equanimity and blessing. They actually begin to create a kind of paranoid world.
Where does, for example, Gwyneth Paltrow fit into all this? Her Goop website, you know, advocates various diets and potions to treat long COVID. For example, she's not a COVID denier, but she has been accused of peddling misinformation. Is she on the continuum?
Well, there is, I'm glad that you used that word. I think there is a continuum that says, that allows for a certain amount of pseudoscience. Interestingly, it was after Kelly Brogan's message to dispel fear that Goop had to distance themselves from her as one of their content providers. She had been a presenter at several of their, you know, high-end ticket events in the years prior. And now, however, she has been replaced as, you know, one of the platform's medical experts by a chiropractor named Will Cole, who is advising Gwyneth herself on Gwyneth's very sad to report she has long COVID. But of course, she's not following, you know, any of the sort of conventional and, you know, tested so far remedies. You know, she is making smoothies and putting on facial dust and wearing $8,000 necklaces and, you know, drinking smoothies out of fancy cups and stuff like that. And also she's intermittently fasting as per the advice of this Dr. Cole. And so the way I see it is that, you know, Goop inhabits this high-end consumer landscape in which spiritualized ideas of health become lifestyle products, signs of conspicuous consumption, and also, you know, sort of fashion statements as well. And also, the discourse encourages people away from thinking about, okay, what does society need actually in order to preserve both life and the quality of life for the greatest number of people, especially people in the service industry, especially essential workers, especially people who are never going to be able to afford Goop products. So within the realm of conspirituality, there are also significant economic and privilege issues that plague the discourse as well.
It's interesting, isn't it? I mean, somebody has used the expression that one reason for this is that we have seen the collapse of the ruling narrative, and this has happened previously in history. And maybe that leads to a kind of intensive identity politics, which is part and parcel of this, belonging to a secret group of people who believe in wacky things.
Yeah, I mean, certainly p researchers who study conspiracy theories name the sort of social cohesion value of belonging to a movement like conspirituality or QAnon as being among the three most important. The other two being, it gives you the chance to feel as though you have access to secret knowledge. And then, in the starkest terms, it gives you the opportunity to feel like you're going to survive in some kind of crisis or disaster situation. But certainly, people do find common cause through these movements. But I would say that to the extent that they're led by charismatic personalities, the relationships that are formed within QAnon and conspirituality demographics are ultimately fragile. Because they depend primarily upon the cohesion of the leader who may or may not be telling them the truth about public health and how best they can take care of themselves.
When you meet somebody who says, you should watch Plandemic, or the pandemic like 9/11 was an inside job, or 5G is going to kill us and there's a microchip in the vaccine, what do you say or do?
So it depends on who the person is and how much social capital you have with them. If we're talking about, you're the admin of a Facebook group, the best practice, hygiene-wise, is to remove the information and block the person if they continue to post it, because at that level of social interaction, disinformation is really like the virus itself. It simply spreads through engagement. So the advice from most sort of data and misinformation specialists is to block and to deplatform. And according to organizations like the Center for Countering Digital Hate, it actually works. So when David Icke was taken off of YouTube, he had 250,000 followers. He's had to move to BitChute, and he's never gotten above 20, I believe. So that works. Now, what about the person that you know? If they are very much opposed to discussion, and you'll probably feel that within the first 5 seconds,
Yes.
it's possible that they've been really persuaded to the point of what I would call indoctrination. And that means that there are other things at play in their beliefs. There might be fear of not believing what they've come to believe. There might be social pressures that you're not aware of. There might be, some kind of trauma response that they're speaking through, that they've been scared to death by Mickey Willis and Plandemic and Kelly Brogan to such an extent that they can't hear a different point of view. They must feel as though they're going to save themselves through the conspiritual solution. And if that's so, then this is where the language of cult recovery, I think, comes in handy. And the primary rule there is that the person is in a state of insecure attachment to not only the world, but to whoever is influencing them. And if you had a good friendship bond with them, then your job, to the extent that you're able, and you might lose patience, and it's very hard, is to continue to be a good friend who talks about normal things and helps them to remember other parts of their life. So this means that, you know, you don't tell them that they're wrong about 5G. You invite them out for tea in, you know, or you go to the cricket match, or you go for a walk along the beach together, and you preserve for that person the memory of who they were before they became so incredibly panicked by the brainworm that is infecting them.
It's depressing, though, isn't it? Because it seems as if society, your society and indeed ours, is spinning off into extremes because, as you said earlier, in order to counteract the wild fever dreams of the right, you have to shout even louder if you want to argue with it.
Yes, well, and that's the thing, is that the information that is presented by the person indoctrinated into QAnon is not information so much as it's affect, so much as it's feeling. And the feeling is the feeling of panic, of anxiety, of persecution, of isolation. And the worst thing that you can do to a person who's experiencing that is to do what the influencer did to them, which was to tell them that they were asleep, or that they were stupid, or that they needed to wake up, or that they were in grave danger and they were ignorant. If you turn around and do that, the person will likely double down. If, however, you are able to connect with some part of the person that has remained, you know, somewhat regulated and connected with the normal world, it might be hard to find that part. That's the part that can be nurtured. What's depressing about it is that the process, the relational process that I'm talking about, takes a lot longer than the online indoctrination process. And the online indoctrination process can happen through YouTube virally. And what I'm talking about really has to happen person to person. And that's why part of what we talk about at length on the podcast is this paradox of being hyper-connected in an internet economy that has become more total in terms of people's dependence since the pandemic started, and also this growing necessity to develop clearer and firmer and more nurturing offline relationships. It's walks in the neighborhood and hands in the garden, and somebody who can remember who the person was on their behalf and communicate with them with a kind of empathy and patience.
The thing about a lot of conspiracy theories, however, Matthew, is that in some of them there is a germ of truth, and that
Absolutely.
Gets built on like the grit in an oyster. And
right.
So you don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater if you can accept those mixed metaphors.
Right. You know, you're so right. In fact, one of the things that we have to repeat over and over again is that conspiracies are real. Jeffrey Epstein ran an enabled child sex trafficking network, and we are going to have to take many years of legal work and intense journalistic investigation to figure out what that actually was, and what the scope of it was. But that's what it's going to take. And if those resources are not applied, and if accountability is not in sight, if it feels like a dream, people will definitely begin to indulge the notion that it was either more widespread than it was, or that it is still going on in some way, and they will have good reason to believe that. The speed of revelation of abuse happens much faster than the capacity to actually unravel its causes. And what we're really looking at is kind of like an epistemological problem writ large, which is that in the absence of being able to really understand the scope of the Epstein network, what is the meme-sized explanation for what is happening throughout the world? Well, QAnon hands it to the vulnerable on a silver platter. And so, yeah, you're pointing to something very, very true. And I would also say that I would hope that we all develop more sensitivity to that aspect of the person who is vulnerable to conspiracism, that it may be that the conspiracy theory that is presented to them feeds and answers some deep questions about an injustice that has never been resolved. And we have to remember, too, that QAnon has resurrected the satanic panic of the 1980s and the 1990s, almost down to the letter. And while thousands of investigations, legally, forensically, journalistically, found zero evidence to support the main premise of the panic, which is that, you know, the abuse of children was motivated by Satanism. This is just not really a thing. It's not like we can close the door on that particular chapter of history and just say, oh, that was a bunch of crazy people saying something, because sooner or later, something else is going to open that door of unprocessed emotion, and it's going to circulate again through the society. And it takes a lot of patience on everybody's part to really figure out how to separate fact from the fiction that feels like it's going to solve the problem.
Excellent to talk to you. Interesting times, Matthew.
Thank you so much, Kim.
Matthew Remsky, who is the host of a podcast called Conspirituality.